After the reception was over, she asked two of the relatives of the bride if they wanted to come by our home to have a few more drinks. I wasn't very happy to see my sister so late with two total strangers in my house, but I didn't want to be rude to the brothers. Over the next few hours, Janice sat on one couch with one of the brothers while I sat on the other couch with the other. We each had separate conversations for hours until we all began talking and, to our surprise, we were all talking about the same thing, me. I told the brothers that I had psychic ability. After some taunting by the three of them, I began to read one of the brothers. Before beginning, I asked him if it was what he wanted and if he would let me see into his life with my gift of ESP. After he agreed, I began to give him intimate details of his life. I explained the home he lived in and described the room in which he spent most of his time with incredible detail. I did this by looking into his eyes, nothing more. I was so accurate in even the smallest details that he tried to throw me off by telling me that I was completely wrong. Even after he said this, I continued telling him details of his most private life. After a couple more minutes, he jumped up and said he was leaving and told me to stop. He was yelling at his brother to come with him immediately. It was obvious to me that I was accurate and I was scaring him. It was not my intention to frighten him, but there was nothing I could say to calm him at that point. The following day, Janice went to her friend's home for a small gathering of guests and family from the wedding the day prior. There, the brother I read the night before told her that I had scared him badly. He told her that I was so accurate that he tried to throw me off by telling me I was wrong. When I continued to tell him things that I couldn't possibly have known with such detail, he became terrified and had to leave. Janice assured him that I wasn't still looking at his life the way I had the night before. It was obvious that I had a natural gift of sight. My reading of the brother was the first time I was so detailed and accurate while making a conscious effort to use my psychic ability. In some ways, it scared me as well, because at that point I wasn't fully in control of it. For some reason, I couldn't shut it off once it began, and for days I couldn't look anyone in the eye or I would get flashes of their private lives. It was a difficult few days. Not being familiar with this new open doorway, I went to my friend Anna, the only person I thought that may have some insight into what was happening to me. When I went to her home, I explained the past 2 days' events and asked her to help me close the doorway I had opened. She went to her kitchen cupboard and pulled out a deck of cards and began to test me by holding up a card and asking me what it was. After about 8 cards, I had every one of them wrong. And then all of a sudden, Anna looked up at me, shocked. "Miriam, you're not guessing the card in my hand, you're telling me the card on the top of the deck. You didn't get any of them wrong, you got every one of them right." When Anna said that, my heart skipped a beat because I realized she was right. After talking with her for a couple of hours, she told me everything she could about what was happening to me. Even with her limited knowledge at the time, it was enough for me to shut the open doorway. I was relieved to be able to look at people again without receiving all of the flashing images of their personal and very private lives. A couple of months after this major psychic experience, life in Cranbrook took on new challenges. Troubles at my parents' home made my life change once again, and my second sister, Carol, came to stay with me. With both of my sisters in my home, I was beginning to feel pressured. With everything that was going on around me, I made the decision to go and visit a friend in Vancouver. On September 3, 1985, I left Cranbrook with one borrowed suitcase and a new focus, to begin living my life for myself and not for anyone else. I arrived in the big city scared and in awe. On my first day in Vancouver, I went out of my friend's apartment to go for a walk and got lost. I was terrified as I walked by all the people and buildings in this strange new place. The feelings that overwhelmed me gave me a strange sense of empowerment. It was a newfound freedom I had never experienced before, and I liked it. And 3 days after arriving in the big city, I called my sisters. I told them that I wasn't coming back and they could keep my apartment if they wanted. As for all my things, they could sell or keep them. I didn't want anything from the life I left behind. Over the next 3 years I lived in the Vancouver area, moving often and trying to find my place in the world. It was strangely liberating to be so isolated from the familiar. Somehow being surrounded by strangers gives a person the courage to be who they are on the inside, so people can see who you really are on the outside. The Highway. 1988. The year was 1988 and I was 22 years old. I left my hometown of Cranbrook at the age of 19 and had been living in Vancouver ever since. I was still relatively new to the city and was not unlike other 22-year-olds. I went out often, taking in Vancouver's nightlife. When I first arrived, I only knew two people that lived in the city. And it changed as over the years a few more of my friends made the move. I was living with my boyfriend and, although things were not going as well as I would have liked, something kept me from leaving. Despite this feeling, I was having a great time exploring my new home and also getting to know who I was. Or so I thought. One early fall day I was home alone. I laid on the couch to take a nap and immediately felt myself traveling through a tunnel. It was as though I was being pulled along. I was looking at the stars all around me except there were three times as many as I would see in the sky at night. When I looked ahead of me I seemed to be traveling through a tunnel at tremendous speed. For never having seen anything like this before I was rather calm and intrigued by the whole process. At the end of the tunnel I stopped and then I sat to talk with a man and woman. They both wore long white robes that covered their feet. The woman was beautiful. Her skin was like a china doll's and she had long blonde hair. The man had dark hair that fell to just above his shoulders. They both had captivating blue eyes. It felt like we were sitting in the middle of the universe. There appeared to be stars all around us. It felt real to me when I was with them. Nothing like a dream. I woke 20 minutes later from this strange conversation, sat up and almost robotically began to pack my things to leave. I called my friend Sally and asked if I could stay with her and her boyfriend. Almost immediately, she and Stuart arrived to help move me into their home. Despite my quick departure, I couldn't seem to shake the encounter with the two beings in the tunnel. I didn't understand what had happened earlier that day and kept going over it in my mind. I had the feeling our meeting was of deep importance to me, but I couldn't remember what the man and woman had said. After being at Sally's for about a week, she asked me if I wanted to go to Cranbrook with her and her boyfriend. We would drive there and back so it wouldn't cost much for the three of us to visit our friends and family. Since I wasn't working, I said I would go with them. We'd done this trip a number of times in the past, so we knew it would take about 13 hours. The only downfall was that Stuart would have to do all of the driving since Sally and I did not have our driver's licenses. We left Vancouver the following week. As usual, just past Oz, Stuart was too tired to keep driving, so we pulled over for about 3 hours while he slept. And 13 hours after leaving Vancouver, we arrived safe and sound in Cranbrook. Sally and Stuart dropped me off at a friend's house and said they would contact me to let me know when we would be leaving. I spent the week visiting my friends and family. I thought my friend Anna might have some explanation to the two beings I met in the tunnel. She was very spiritual and sometimes had explanations for things I didn't understand. Why did I see these beings to begin with? Did they want me to leave my boyfriend for some reason? After all, the way I left him was rather odd because it was so sudden. Maybe they knew something I didn't and were looking out for me. And it was Anna's explanation. Maybe they were what she called my spirit guides. And it seemed like a reasonable explanation since I had always believed people were being watched over by angels. The week flew by and Friday night rolled around rather quickly. It was my last night in town and I was out to have a good time before going back to Vancouver. I wanted to get drunk and party with friends. And that decision led me to a miserable Saturday morning. Feeling sick and tired, I heaved my weary body back into the car that morning and prepared for the long drive back to Vancouver. Sally's sister, Heather, and her son who was 4 years old decided to come with us. And it meant that we would have an extra driver so it would not take as long as usual to get home. The journey back to Vancouver began uneventfully and was rather boring. I was happy to sit in the back seat and sleep since I was still nursing the consequences of the night before. We made the usual stops for gas, coffee and food. None of us wanted the trip to be longer than it had to be, so the stops were brief. If possible, we would take our purchases of food with us rather than sit around wasting time eating. After dinner, Heather's son was fast asleep between us in the back seat. The day faded into night and I was finally beginning to feel like myself. The hum of the engine kept me drifting in and out of sleep. As night crept in, those beautiful stars that always seemed to elude us in the city began to show themselves. I was drifting off to sleep when boom, just like I had weeks before, I found myself being pulled through a tunnel. At the end I sat and spoke with the same man and woman as last time. When I woke I felt shaken, not only by the experience but by what I remembered them saying. They said to me, "Do not be afraid. We are your friends, we are your family. You have chosen to be here at this time. We are coming for you soon. Do not be afraid." When I woke from this strange clear dream, I was taken aback by it. I began to think about the last time I saw them in my dream on the couch and wondered what they meant by all they said to me. I wanted to tell Sally, but what would I tell her? I stared out the window intently after the dream, looking at the stars. I kept hearing the words play over and over in my mind, "We are coming for you soon." How, why and when they were coming, none of what they said made any sense to me. Stuart was driving and talking with Sally, who was in the passenger seat. After a short time he asked Heather to take over driving so he could get some rest. And it meant that I would now be the co-pilot as I moved into the front passenger seat to keep Heather company. Since we had no tape player in the car, we listened to the radio. Its signal would fade in and out, so we left it on low volume, turning it down when we lost the signal and up when the music came on. We drove for a short time, talking. As always, I stared at those beautiful stars. There were fewer and fewer cars on the road as we drove through the night and it became darker and more solitary. We began driving on an incline that had a passing lane. It was at this moment that everything changed. Both Heather and I noticed lights behind us that were closing the gap between the two cars rather quickly. I commented that they would pass us for sure because they were traveling so fast. The lights were odd, big and round, similar to those of a container truck, but so bright that we couldn't see the vehicle at all. They didn't pass us. They stayed right on our tail all the way up the incline. Car lights crested the hill from the opposite direction. In that moment the lights behind us drifted back into the darkness and were gone. For the next couple of hours these lights appeared and disappeared often. Each time they appeared a strange radio station could be heard, apparently broadcasting from somewhere in the southwestern United States. And this was more than a little weird, and Heather and I talked about it. Each time the lights appeared they would catch up to us very quickly but never pass. If there was a car coming towards us or if we went through a small town, the lights would simply disappear, only to reappear in the blink of an eye. We were getting scared and questioned why they were following us so closely but never passing. Heather and I were completely freaked out by the whole thing. The lights had come up behind us again and again, and we wondered why they would never pass or stay behind us if anyone else was around. I knew the highway went straight through the next town we were coming to. It was a long distance from one end of the town to the other. I told Heather to drive as fast as she could so we could get as far as possible from the strange lights. As we turned the corner out of town, they were nowhere to be seen. "Okay," I said. "There is no way they can catch us now. No car driving the length of through that town could have caught up to us." How wrong I was. The minute we were out of sight of the town, poof, the lights reappeared. Neither Heather nor myself noticed them approaching, they were just suddenly there. "Where did they come from?" we screamed. There was no way they could have caught up with us. I yelled. Again the strange radio station came on and we panicked. Heather yelled at me to watch them and poof, they were gone. I looked in the side mirror of the car and blinked. There they were again. I turned around to watch them and told Heather I wouldn't take my eyes off of them. And then I blinked and they were gone. Behind us was only darkness. I didn't see them disappear. I screamed. Do you see them, Miriam? Heather asked. No. I yelled. We both watched for them so we could see where they were coming from and where they went. Finally Heather said, maybe it is a UFO. I was very scared now. The lights continued to appear and disappear more quickly. They no longer pulled back into the darkness. Instead it was like a light switch being flicked on and off. The lights were there and, just as suddenly, gone. From out of nowhere I heard my own voice yelling at Heather. Pull over the car. No, she said. You don't know who they are. They could be killers and want to cut us up and put us in the trunk. I'm not pulling over. I yelled at her again, pull over the damn car now. It's not you they want, it's me. Why did I say that? I thought. I went to reach for the steering wheel with my left hand, but at that moment Heather's head tilted and she looked like she was in a trance as she pulled the car over to the side of the road. Suddenly we were engulfed in bright white light. I looked around to the back seat and saw Stuart, Sally and Heather's son all lying still as if they were in a drug-induced sleep. My mind went blank as I watched the light fill every corner of my vision. Where was it coming from? As I sat in the front seat I wondered what the hell was going on. Everyone was completely still. By this time our car was on the shoulder of the road and had come to a complete stop. I looked behind the car and saw that the big balls of light were there again. As I turned to look at the front of the car I found my answer. A very bright disc-shaped craft was on the road. I could see a doorway to the craft was open with beings walking off it towards the car. My heart began to pound so hard, I thought I was going to die right there. Do not be afraid, I kept hearing in my head. Do not be afraid. Get out of the car. I reached for the door handle and slowly opened the car door. It was like watching my body, I had no control. Why am I getting out of the car? I thought. It was like I was standing beside myself watching what I was doing while my brain couldn't communicate with my body. I lost all free will. It was cold outside the car and there was mist in the air. Heat came from the craft that sat on the road in front of me. I stood motionless, waiting, as about six of them came walking toward me. They looked small, almost childlike, with big round black eyes. Stay calm, we will not harm you, I kept hearing, but I did not see anyone speak to me. After a moment, two of them came up to me and told me to close the door of the car and go with them. They led me by the hands. I felt entranced looking at their huge dark eyes. And their hands were slightly cold to the touch and I remember thinking, where are they taking me? For some reason I was not speaking to them verbally. It seemed that when we both spoke it was through some kind of telepathy. They led me across to the left-hand side of the road and as I looked up I saw another craft. And his one was larger than the one on the road. There, in the doorway, I saw them, two tall beings with blonde hair and brilliant, large blue eyes. In a rather rude manner I asked them, what are you doing here? Can't you leave me alone? I then asked myself, what the hell am I saying? As I approached the entrance the small beings let go of my hands and I simply walked onto the craft. I knew that this was not the first time I had met the tall blondes. How and when we met before was confusing to me in that moment. What happened in the following hours started me on a lifelong journey to find truth, peace, acceptance and understanding of this experience. Some of the time I spent with them was clear in my mind from that moment forward. Other parts would take weeks, months and even years to come into clear focus. The events that transpired, as well as what I was shown and told inside the craft that fateful day, eventually returned to my consciousness. My time with them came to an end and the craft landed so that I could be taken back to the car. I had no idea how long I'd been gone and my thoughts turned to my friends. I was led back to the car by the short beings and told to take my shoes off and put them in the back seat. We do not want you to remember that you left the car yet and your feet are wet, they told me. So, just as before, in an almost hypnotic state, I did as I was told. The car door closed and I sat watching the little ones go back onto the craft. With a flash it lifted straight up and quickly vanished. As they left, my mind became free and my thoughts were my own again. They were no longer sharing my headspace. The second the craft and the balls of light were gone, everyone in the car began to stir. The conversation was very normal for such a strange night. Stuart asked, "Why are we stopped? Did you want me to drive again?" "Yes," said Heather, as she shifted around in her seat. "What time is it?" she asked but never got a reply. The four of us traded seats. Stuart complained to Heather about turning the car off because it was so cold. I jumped into the back seat and the conversation turned to the strange lights that had been following us for hours. Heather started talking about the radio that kept coming on with the strange station. Sally told us she had also noticed the radio fading in and out for a long time and also noticed the strange lights. We all thought it was quite strange. I asked Sally why she didn't tell us about the lights when we had switched drivers. Neither she nor Stuart answered. The car wasn't running, so Stuart started it. He said he didn't want to talk about the lights anymore and insisted we all stop talking about them. He pulled the car out onto the road and as he did the lights shone onto the left shoulder of the highway. "Hush, there they are," I thought, "now they can all see them." "Look," I shouted. "Look at that on the side of the road." There were at least five sets of big glowing eyes staring back at us. "It's Dear Miriam," Stuart shouted. "No, it's not," I said. "Look at them. They are not deer. Can't you see them?" He kept arguing with me and explained that deer come down from the mountains to eat on the shoulder of the road because that is where the best grazing is. "Why are they standing so close together?" I asked. Everyone in the car began to get mad at me. "Don't you remember the lights? What the hell is going on?" I said. As we drove past, I asked, "Why would they all be standing beside that house with all the floodlights on?" I tried to get Stuart to stop the car and look at them, but we began to argue and he got very angry. He told me and everyone else to shut up about it, saying that if I didn't stop talking, he would stop the car and make me walk home. Heather and Sally yelled at me to please let it go. Afraid Stuart may lose his temper, I reluctantly stopped talking. Not a single word was said by anyone in the car until we arrived back in Vancouver and pulled into the driveway. The sun was beginning to rise and a thin light was filtering into the dark sky as the car rolled to a stop in front of our home. It was the first time anyone had said a word in hours. The conversation began with everyone talking about how great it was to be home. Quickly the conversation changed to the strange lights that we all saw. Everyone had their own ideas as to what they thought it was that happened on the drive. Stuart laughed and said, "Who knows, maybe it was a UFO. Do we have any missing time?" "What do you mean?" I asked. "When aliens take you and spend time with you, you can't account for the time you were with them." He looked at his wristwatch just as he approached the door to the house. Looking up with a smile, he chuckled gleefully and said, "Nope, it took 13 hours, just as long as usual." I walked into the house with my bags and took them up to my room. As I took my coat off, I looked down at my favorite beige shirt. There was some sort of black smear on it. As soon as I noticed it, I slipped back into a robotic state. I took the shirt off and put it directly in the garbage. Not only did I put it in the garbage, but I also took it to the bin outside. Why? I kept asking myself even as I was doing it. It was my favorite shirt. Why not try to clean it? Even Sally tried to get me to attempt to clean it first. But I got angry with her, so she dropped the subject. After disposing of the shirt, I went back up to my room. There was a dull ache on the right side of my abdomen. When I looked down at the area, I noticed a round red spot about 2 inches in diameter. In the center there was what appeared to be an incision. Once again I heard a voice in my head. It was telling me, "Do not to look at it again. Leave it alone and it will go away. Hush, there is no need to be concerned." I put my nightshirt on and didn't look at it again for months. I slept most of the next day recuperating from the long drive. I had strange dreams and saw the man and woman again. When I awoke, I began to write down everything I remembered from the night before. When I wrote, I started remembering many of the things they told me. You will remember this, you will remember, they had said just before they took me go back to the car. The tall blonde aliens looked into my eyes with their bright blue eyes and white, translucent skin as they repeated the message, you will remember this. So much of the information in my mind didn't make sense, but I knew it was important to write it down. It was as though they had downloaded information into my mind and I had to look at each piece and then find the appropriate place to file it. The whole experience was overwhelming. Overnight I became a completely different person. I stopped drinking, smoking, partying and eating red meat. Everyone I knew kept telling me how different I seemed and how they were concerned. Prior to that night I had never meditated. Now I found myself in meditation 2 to 3 times a day, during which I sometimes saw the man and woman from my past encounters. At times I saw other beings that gave me a great deal of spiritual knowledge. It was always an enlightening experience to go into a deep meditation. From the moment I woke from my nap after we arrived back in Vancouver, one thing was clear, my psychic ability was wide open. It was as though the tall blonde aliens gave me the gift of sight, a sight so far reaching that I could never in a lifetime explain to someone what I saw and understood about our world and the universe. It was the most beautiful gift I could ever have been given. On the other hand, it was difficult to maintain the level of awareness they gave me in a world that is no place for such insightfulness. I gave a lot of thought as to how long I spent with those beings in the days after seeing them. Finally, I realized one important fact about our trip. We drove for 13 hours, but we didn't stop like we normally did to let Stuart sleep for 3 hours. We had 2 drivers and we didn't make any extra stops than usual on our trip home. We should have been home after 10 hours. We had 3 hours of missing time. Not everything was completely clear. What did they do to my stomach where the redness was? Why couldn't I remember that part of what happened? Some of the details were fuzzy, yet the message remained clear. My job was to educate others about who they were. Strange memories began to resurface from my childhood that implied my father knew who these beings were. Some of the things he talked about when we were kids made me think he was very familiar with who these beings were. Months after seeing the aliens, I still had telepathic communication with them. One afternoon, as I was walking down Granville Street, from out of nowhere I heard the voice of one of the aliens booming in my head, directing me to enter a jewelry store. I opened the door to the store and entered. "Walk straight ahead," they said, and so I followed the request. With no hesitation I was directed straight to a counter, told to turn right and look down. "You need to buy the necklace, it is important to you." 2 identical necklace pendants sat there, one blue and one red. "Which one?" I asked in my mind. Personally I liked the red one, ruby, but I was directed to buy the blue one, which was sapphire. Both of the pendants were rather dainty with 9 small points that made the shape of a star. I didn't question why they asked me to purchase the necklace. I had enough prior contact with them to know there must be a good reason. I knew I only had $110 and not a dime more. I asked the clerk what the cost was. My heart sank when she told me it was $130, before tax. "Do not concern yourself with the cost, she will give it to you as it was meant to be," the voice boomed. I looked at the clerk and explained that I couldn't afford it. She then surprisingly lowered the price. Again, I had to tell her I didn't have enough money. She finally looked at me and asked how much money I had. I told her I only had $110. I was shocked when she told me that it was enough and that she would give me a gold chain as well. I walked out of the store onto the street with the blue star pendant around my neck. In my mind I asked the aliens what it meant and why I was instructed to buy it. They replied, "It is a blue star and it is very important to you. One day you will understand its full meaning. It is sacred and it is important to many people in the future. It will help you remain close to us." Once the necklace went on my neck, I never took it off. It became a symbol to me of everything I knew to be the truth. And that truth was clear: human beings are not the only intelligent life on the planet, and, one day, everyone would know that as well. Memories return,